Judging based off of the faces I'm getting, you're as confused by that question as I was the first time I had to write about it. But essentially what the question means, what Tertullian was asking, and it's a very relevant question for us today, is what has Athens, or what has learning to do with Jerusalem, or faith, right? So he's using Athens and Jerusalem in a kind of symbolic way. He's asking, what is the relationship between our brains and our souls? What is the relationship between our intellectual life and our spiritual life? Like, how do these things go together? Are they in conflict? Are they in harmony? What's the relationship between our brains and our mental activity and our spiritual and our faith, right? So it's always been understood that you don't have to get some kind of degree to follow Jesus, right? Like, we know this. You don't have to go and get a special degree to be a Christian. Oftentimes in the Bible, faith is described as something that's a childlike experience, right? There's just this trust. There's even something natural about it, right? Like a kid who's 5 years old can believe and can have faith, right? There's often people, like today in this world that we live in, countless people across the world who they're uneducated, they're illiterate, they're impoverished, they're in conditions where they might face various degrees of persecution, and yet those people are willing to die for their faith sometimes, and sometimes they do, based on the fact that, like, they just have this trust, right? Even if they can't read, even if they don't have a copy of the scriptures in their own language, they have a spiritual vitality, right? Like, they have a genuine and a deep and a rich faith, a rich and deep relationship with God. So on the one hand, it seems like learning and education and deep stuff and theology and all that is, like, not that important, not that big of a deal. Yet on the other hand, we also know that faith is complex. Faith can be complicated. And as you guys have grown up from when you were, you know, yay high to where you are now, like, you've developed some more mature ways of thinking. You develop some more critical thought. You've been educated and you've learned to think more deeply about your faith and about all sorts of areas of life, right? And we know that there are people who give their entire lives, it's their career, it's their vocation, to study and learning, right? They're scholars and they're, you know, theologians and philosophers and people who are, like, really running after the big questions of life, because faith is this, like, complex, deep thing that you could spend a lifetime and only scratch the surface of trying to address all the big questions about the Bible and these strange passages, or how to live in this circumstance, or what this really means, or what can we actually say about God, and all that stuff, right? Like, there's big questions involved. And many times people go through a sort of awakening to these, like, big questions of life, where their faith gets deeper and more mature and healthy, but also more complicated. Sometimes that happens in high school. Some of you are in that place where, like, you're starting, like, things are clicking, and you're starting to become aware of the fact that the faith I had when I was 11 is not going to sustain me now that I'm 15, 16, 17, 18, right? Like, things are starting to shift. Some of you become more and more aware of that as you step into college and in years beyond, right? Like, you'll sometimes be sudden, sometimes it'll be gradual, but you'll awaken to the reality that, whoa, my childlike faith is not going to support me. There's things that are more to be learned, right? There's a deepening that needs to take place in my walk with Jesus. And some of you, that'll be a really disorienting experience, right? Like, many are the students who are sitting in their, you know, college classroom in biology 101 or intro to Western philosophy, and they're having a crisis of faith, and they're deconstructing, they're asking big questions. Some of you, that may be your experience. You might be, like, on the cusp of that later in high school or in college or whatever, because we realize at some point that faith is, on the one hand, simple, and on the one hand, really complicated. So what is the relationship between learning and spiritual life? And which is it, right? Like, is learning essential for your faith, or is it non-essential for your faith? Or to put it differently, let me ask it this way. Is learning and education, is that something that's going to help you sharpen your faith, or is that something that's actually possibly going to shake your faith? And I would maybe ask you to consider, and we'll talk some more about this later tonight, but I would maybe ask you to consider that it might just be the case that you need learning, and you need education, and you need that deepening precisely in order to shake your faith so that it can be sharpened. That's some of the work that learning does. It helps us unpack and unlearn some things. It shakes us a little bit, but because of that shaking, we are sharpened in our faith. What if that is what learning is meant to do? So tonight, it's the last session, right, in our teaching series, walking through practices of spiritual formation. And the topic, if you aren't aware or haven't guessed it yet, tonight we're going to be talking about is the practice of learning, all right? Now, learning is probably the most general or vague of all the practices, right? Like, it's not quite as easy to, you know, check a box and say I did this one specific thing because there's so many ways to learn, right? So many different forms of learning, so many different subjects of learning. So we'll talk about some of that in a second. But I first want to start off just orienting us to the value and the purpose of learning for our faith. So let me start off with a question here, and I actually want a little bit of feedback, so you got to help me out here, okay? Why do you go to school? Okay, what is the purpose of your education? Honest answers only, all right? Why did you go to school? Somebody shout. To learn, you were forced. Those are both true. Why else? Get a job, have a future, trying to avoid homelessness. Yes, these are things, right? What? Legal reasons? Because the government says you have to go to high school, yeah. Torture, somebody's trying to torture you. Oh, no. Was there an answer over here? Canada, did you say something? Sorry, I called out, my bad. Okay, these are all true reasons, right? Why you go to school, you're forced to, the government says you have to, your parents make you, you want to learn, you want to get a job, you want to be able to, like, be independent, move out of your house someday, not be homeless, make money. All these things are good reasons, right? Of course, like, yes, to learn, like, all those are good and valid reasons why we go to school, why we pursue education, why we try to learn some things, right? Grow our understanding and our knowledge. But there is probably a reason beyond all that, or an ultimate end goal for which all of learning is purposed. All of learning is oriented towards this, right? All of learning is moving us in this direction, okay? And I want to tell you what that is, but I got to introduce you to somebody first. His name is Sir Philip Sidney, okay? I got a picture of him here. Dashing young fellow here. Sir Philip Sidney was a scholar and did a bunch of other things, kind of a Renaissance man. He back in the 1600s, so that was their getup back in, I don't know, the 1600s, I guess. All right, and he was the one who kind of helped us frame what the purpose of learning and education is. This is what he said. If you're following your notes, I put it there too. The end of all earthly learning is virtuous action. The end of all earthly learning is virtuous action. In other words, what he's saying, and this fits so well with our definition that we've been using all series long, right? That spiritual formation is a process of being formed in the image of Christ for the sake of others. That it's not just that something vertical happens, but something horizontal happens as well as we grow in the spiritual life. So earthly learning is that way too. Earthly learning is meant to form us into a kind of people who are virtuous, who have virtue, right? Which means who have character, who have integrity, who possess things like humility and love and kindness and mercy and all those types of things, oriented towards virtuous action. This tracks with what Christians have taught about learning since the earliest days of the faith. Christians have always taught that learning is not just about information, but formation. It's not just that we're going to grow in our knowledge so that we can get into the next school and then get into grad school and then get a good job and, you know, make some money and then get a bonus and then buy a house and have a white picket fence and then, like, we'll live a happy, comfortable life. Like, a job and money, those things are necessary, but they're not the ultimate ends. That's not what life is about, right? That's not the ultimate purpose of learning. It's so that you will become a virtuous person. So we learn not just for information, but for formation. So let me define for us, what do we mean as we're talking about this spiritual practice of learning, all right? In your notes, it says this: the spiritual practice of learning is the intentional cultivation of wisdom. The intentional cultivation of wisdom. It's a form of loving the Lord our God with all our minds by maturing intellectually. We want to love the Lord our God with all our minds by maturing intellectually. And so there's a bunch of ways that we do that, where we do it through reading, through memorizing, observing, listening, conversing. And tonight I'm going to focus on and kind of lean mostly into learning in direct relation to our faith. But let me just say this so we don't get confused. The practice of learning has all sorts of subjects that can form us spiritually, right? Like, you don't just have to study theology and study the Bible to participate in the spiritual practice of learning, right? There are things you can learn in history, in the arts, in science, right? All sorts of areas, economics, politics, whatever, literature, that will grow you and form you and shape you as a person so that you're developing virtue and learning how to live like Jesus. So it's not just like the Bible is the only book you should ever read. That's not what we're talking about when we talk about learning. We're just talking about growing our minds and maturing in our thought in all areas of life, because all of that is doing something to our heart, doing something to our character, as well as to our brains. Yes, you with me? So many methods as well to this, right? You can read books, articles, videos, classes, podcasts, conferences, seminars, what have you. You are probably the generation that has more access to information, knowledge, understanding, and learning than anybody on planet Earth has ever had. And you have it in your pocket right now, right? Like, you have more access to the world's knowledge than anyone who has ever lived. And there's a million different ways where we can consume that content and digest it and take it in and learn and grow through it. So there's like an infinite ways to practice the spiritual discipline of learning. So I want to spend our time looking at some of the ways that we might fall off the path when it comes to learning as a spiritual practice, okay? So first, I want to name kind of two ditches, right? Like, if you're on a path here, right, the straight and narrow, like there's a ditch on this side and a ditch on this side. There's, I think, one error over here and one over here, and we're going to stay in between these two and not fall into either of these, okay? So two errors. The first thing, one error is to think that learning is sufficient on its own, that if I just take in, you know, like podcasts, and if I watch YouTube videos about Jesus or whatever, and if I, you know, study my Bible, and if I read theology or whatever, right, then, like, I'm going to become like Jesus. And if I just know enough things, and if I have enough understanding, then that's going to automatically translate to wisdom and character and integrity, and I'm going to live like Jesus just because I know all the things, right? There's something wrong with that way of thinking, though. Part of what's wrong with that way of thinking is that it imagines the way that we grow and are shaped and transformed to be like Jesus is always through our brains. But we know that's not true, right? We're embodied people, and so we learn through practice and experience and emotions and lots of other things. So there's not just this one track where we learn only through knowledge and information transfer. And the reality is that as you learn new things, you might have a tendency to develop not just like enlightenment, but even some blind spots, right? Like, it's not as if you gain more information, that's automatically going to make you a wiser person. Knowing some things might actually make you prone to miss some stuff as well. To think that, to deceive yourself into believing that you have it all figured out, that you know it all, right? And so there's some things to be aware of even as we learn and grow, right? Paul is dealing with this in the church in Corinth. The church in Corinth was filled with people who had knowledge, who had gifting, right? And if you're somebody who's like, you got knowledge and you got gifting, hey, that's awesome. And that's going to set you up really well. But if those things aren't accompanied by virtues like humility and love, that might actually make you a little bit dangerous. That might actually make you somebody who's an arrogant person or an uncompassionate person or a self-righteous person or a hypocritical person. So Paul's dealing with this situation in Corinth. He's got a lot of people that are praying in tongues or prophesying, and they tell Paul, we possess some knowledge, right? They got some theological insights. But Paul speaks a word to them in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 through 3. There had been this controversy about whether or not you could eat food that had been sacrificed to false gods. And the Corinthian church, they said that we got some information about this. We got some theological ideas about this. And this is what Paul had to say. He said, now about food sacrificed to idols, we know that, and he's quoting them here, we all possess knowledge. Paul's like, all right, you told me that. We all possess knowledge. But knowledge puffs up while love builds up. It edifies. Those who think they know something do not yet know as they ought to know. But whoever loves God is known by God. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. So the important thing for Paul is not to know about God, but to be known by God. That's the more important, the more foundational thing, right? Not just to know things about God, but to be known by God. And that's only experienced through love. So Paul's like, hey, pat yourselves on the back. Like, you know some things, right? You got some theological ideas. You got some gifting. That's great. But where's the love? Where's the humility? Are you known by God? That's the more important thing. There's a danger for us to be aware of as we are people who are hungry for learning, or if you're growing in information and knowledge, that's great. But be aware that that can be abused. We can be self-deceived, thinking that we're mature and healthy when in fact we just know a lot of stuff. And having some book smarts and knowing some things isn't the same as having character and abiding in Jesus. There are six different occasions in the Gospels. All six of these are recorded in the Gospel of Matthew, and then Mark and Luke and John repeat some of these same examples, these same stories. But there are six occurrences in the Gospels where Jesus is having some conversation or a confrontation with somebody, and he asks them the question, have you not read? And he's usually talking about something in the scriptures when he says that. He says, have you not read? Five out of the six times when Jesus has that exchange with somebody, he's talking to the Pharisees or the Sadducees, right? Teachers of the law. People who were like the scholars of the day. And he says, have you not read? It's kind of be like if you were talking to a Bible teacher or something, and you were like, hey, haven't you been reading your Bible? Right? It's a little bit of an underhanded kind of thing, right? He's saying like, hey, you should know this, but obviously you don't. And so he asks them this question. They realize, no, we don't. We've read the words, sure, we're scholars. Like, we've read it, but we haven't digested it. It's not taking root in our souls. It's not being transformative for our lives. And this is what Jesus is trying to get at. He's trying to help them see, look, you've read these things. I know you have, but you live as if you haven't read them. Because you're not different, you're not changed, you're not healthy, you're not mature, you're not living in obedience to these words. And so my caution to you in the front of this, in this one ditch over here, is to ask yourself, is my pursuit of knowledge a bridge into life with God, or is it a barrier? This might not apply to all of you, but for many of you, you're like hungry for the things of the Lord, and you're really trying to grow in your faith. And that's fantastic, and I would applaud you for that. But I would issue you a warning that I think comes from the scriptures themselves that would say, be careful in your pursuit of knowledge, that it doesn't become a barrier to life with God when it ought to be a bridge to life with God. Be aware of what's going on in your soul. In another passage, Paul says, we preach Christ crucified. That's foolishness to Greeks, and it's a stumbling block to the Jews. He says, be aware, right? What motivation lies behind your hunger for knowledge? Is it a bridge or is it a barrier to you? That's one ditch. The other ditch over here on the other side is the error of thinking that learning is irrelevant. It's thinking like, you know what? I'm good. Seriously, I'm good. Like, I got video games to be playing. I don't need like books. I don't need a podcast. I hate school. That's not for me. It's not my thing. In no way I'm signing up for a class. Like, I'm going to make it through college so I can, you know, meet the girl of my dreams, and then I'm out, right? Like, some of us, we have this mentality, these kind of false ideas about what learning is all about, the purpose of education. But broadly speaking, we're just not interested. We don't think it's vital or important for us to grow in our faith in an intellectual way, or just to broaden our horizons and deepen our minds and our understanding of things. We feel like theology, psychology, history, the arts doesn't really matter. We're so like, if I can't use it, then it has no purpose. If it can't make me money, if it can't make me comfortable or entertain me, then what's the point? But this is a foolish way of thinking. Literally, Proverbs 1:7 says this, fools despise wisdom and instruction. And here's the thing, if we're apathetic, or meaning if we're lazy, or if we're resistant to learning, that'll make us naive and ignorant of the depths and the complexities of faith and life. And what that'll do to you over time is that you won't be the kind of person who's able to handle serious things with the delicateness that they require, right? You're not going to be able to walk with people. You're not going to be able to mentor others. You're not going to be able to lead people through the difficult stuff of life. You're not going to have wisdom to offer and share. You're going to be staying in the shallow end. You're not going to be seen as a person of depth and insight who has something to offer and to share. When you look into the wellspring of your life and you try to pull out what's in there and offer it to somebody, it's going to be like an inch deep puddle. And so we got to understand that there is an essential purpose to learning and to deepening our minds and our life with God in an intellectual way. In the first few centuries of the church, it was normal, it was a custom for new converts to the faith to go through a process called catechesis. Okay, catechesis. And we have versions of this that are still around today in different traditions of the church. But this is what it is, right? Catechesis is a period of learning where a new Christian is initiated into the teaching and the way of Jesus. It's a period of learning where a new Christian is initiated into the teaching, into the way of Jesus. Now, that process of catechesis would normally last for a year or even sometimes more. And during that time, they would be taught and trained and instructed in the theology and the teaching of Jesus and the apostles on how to live this new Christian life, right? It was this in-depth process they would go through. And on the back end of that, then they would be baptized and then they would be brought into, officially, into the church, into the body of Christ. And so we got to ask ourselves, why would the church do that? Why make people be catechized, instructed, taught? Why have them be like designated as learners for a period of time before they'd be brought into the church? The very simple answer is that they just took discipleship like real seriously, right? They understood that discipleship is everything. It's a big deal. We've got to run after a depth of spiritual formation in these people's lives. So we've got to enter them into this kind of process, right? They recognize that converting, imagine this, if you're in this world in like 200 AD, converting from a Roman pagan way of life and religion to this new thing called Christianity, right? Like making that switch was kind of like moving from Springfield, Illinois to planet Mars. I mean, it was just like this whole other reality that was so different and so new. To make that switch, this entirely like radical reorientation of how you're going to live, how you're going to believe, what's true, what's real, what's good, what's beautiful, what's right, all that stuff was like just like mind-altering. And so they said, we got to help people make the switch. We got to help move them from point A into point B in their intellectual and their moral and their spiritual life. This is essential for them. So here's my point. Here's my point in all this, right? Ultimately, I think we mess this up because we don't see the Christian way of life as all that radical or distinct from the American way of life. The early church was so serious about catechesis, about discipleship, about training and learning and growing in these ways because they understood that the Christian way of life was like miles and miles different from the Roman pagan previous way of life. But if you think that Christianity is kind of like just a little bit of an add-on or like a sort of, you know, a different take on like how to be a regular American, then you're not going to view learning as all that essential because you won't think you have much to learn. You won't think there's that much transformation that needs to take place. But if you believe that confessing Jesus as Lord is like the most radical thing you could possibly say, and if you really believe it and lived it, you would have a totally changed life, then you're going to be hungry. You're going to have this spiritual appetite to know the things of God, to understand and to grow in your faith in all sorts of ways. And if we're not going to do that, we're just going to stay comfortable, we're going to stay shallow, and we're going to miss out on the depth and the riches that God has for us. So those are our two ditches. Now, does this mean that all of us need to go to Bible college? No, right? Again, no special degrees required to follow Jesus. In fact, Jesus himself probably didn't receive any formal rabbinical training. There's one occasion where Jesus is teaching in the temple courts, and people are amazed at his teaching. And so they come up to him, and this is the question they ask him. This is John 7:15. They say, how did this man get such learning without having been taught? Like, they know who he is. They know the power of his teaching. Like, this is something new and special and unique. But they know who he is. They're like, this is Joseph's son. He's from Nazareth. This is a small country town. He didn't grow up in Jerusalem, which is one of the main learning centers in Israel at the time. He didn't grow up in Alexandria, Egypt, where they had a great library, right, where there was another big learning center. He wasn't trained by a famous rabbi that they knew in the community. He was blue collar. He was an artisan, a craftsman, right? He was a tradesman. He was somebody who sweat for a living and worked with his hands. And so they're looking at this guy going like, wait, he's not a scholar, but this guy knows some things. Right? He's not like an official rabbi, but man, there's something about the depth of this guy's learning and understanding that compels us and draws us into him. And that's how it ought to be for us too, right? No matter if you end up going to Bible college, no matter if you go to seminary, no matter if you end up working, you know, behind a desk in a cubicle or riding on a tractor in the field, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter. There is opportunity and need for you to deepen your faith, to learn and to grow intellectually, to understand some things, to grow in your knowledge and your hunger for the things of God, to renew your mind. So I want to use the rest of our time to help us wrap our heads around some of what I'm going to call malformed ways of learning or pitfalls in learning. And essentially all I mean by malformed is badly formed. That's what the prefix mao means, right? Like some bad or some improper or unhealthy ways to go about learning, okay? And I'm going to lay all these out here, not because I'm trying to like say all the bad ways to learn, but just to give us a kind of diagnostic so we can self-assess, like look inward and say, is that me? Do I do that? Do I think that way? And that we will know how to walk the path and learn more deeply what God has for us in the right way, okay? So I'm going to leave six of these out here for you, right? The first one is trivial learning. Trivial learning. That's diverting our minds to frivolous subject matters, a fascination with mere spectacle and entertainment. Trivial learning. So when I was in high school, I used to be really into the Saw movie franchise. Some of you may not know what that is. Some of you may know what that is. It's some scary stuff. Looking back, I like cannot believe that my parents let me watch those movies, or that I wanted to watch those movies, right? If you don't know, it's just kind of like a gory horror movie series. And I honestly, like, I have no idea looking back why that was fascinating to me, but there was just this, like, curiosity. And even though I knew that was, like, not like going to give me nightmares, it was, like, going to fill my mind with some messed up stuff, like, there was just this curiosity. It was like a spectacle, and there was something entertaining that drew me in about that. And so by trivial learning, all we mean is the thing that we're giving our time and attention to is what's filling and forming our minds worthy of the time and attention we're going to give to it. Is it going to be healthy for us? And I'm not saying we can't give our time, like, you're going to play video games and you're going to, you know, play board games and you're going to, like, play sports and you're going to, like, do fun things, like, recreation is good. So I'm not saying we can't give time and attention to things unless it's, like, you know, a book. But what I am saying is that we need to be wise, discerning, careful what we fill our minds, what we allow to form our minds. Is it really worth the time and attention we're going to give to it? So that's trivial learning. It's just diverting our minds to things that don't matter, that aren't important, that might be unhealthy for us. The second thing is anecdotal learning. And that's a distrust of experts, of data, of sources outside of one's own experience. All right, this is the thing, in part, that makes conspiracy theorists, right? This is the part of us that says, I've got to be the person who judges what's true based on my own experience. So some of y'all, you may have seen, like, videos like I have, like, flat earther stuff out there, right? And it cracks me up, even though it also breaks my heart and makes me angry all at the same time. But you'll see people, like, standing out in a field, and it's, like, flat for, like, miles and miles. And they're like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, the earth is flat. Look, I'm looking at it. Like, it's flat. Right? Like, I can't see the curve. It's flat. Right? And they're judging everything based on their own standpoint in that moment, based on your own perspective. And so that's an unhealthy way of going about learning. We isolate ourselves from truth and from other experiences and sources outside ourselves, right? You've all probably got that relative, that friend, or whoever on Facebook that's going to, you know, share some crazy out there meme or like super long viral post, and at the end it's gonna be like hashtag do your own research, right? And usually just what that means is like a kind of anti-intellectual thing of like don't trust them, and them is always this vague, nebulous, like out there thing, right? And it just kind of means like, hey, believe yourself and nobody else, and shutting ourselves off, living in an echo chamber, right, of our own experience. That stuff is kind of dangerous. You have to be aware of that as we seek to learn and to grow. The third thing, superficial learning. That's assuming or feigning, which means pretending, right, expertise, while possessing only a surface level understanding of something. This is also a social media thing, right? Basically 99%, I just made up that number, but like 99% it feels like of political discourse, conversation out there on social media is superficial learning, right? Like, everyone's an expert. That's amazing how that happens. Everyone's an expert. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody knows something, has something to share. Everybody's got an insight. And so my word of caution to you in that is that it's okay to say, I don't know. In fact, you will never get anywhere in your intellectual life with Jesus if you're not willing to start there and say, I don't know. I'm facing uncertainty here. It's a toss-up for me. I'm kind of leaning this way, but I could be wrong, right? Or I don't have enough information yet to make a judgment call about this. I'm not well enough informed yet on this issue to take a strong stance here. So I'm going to hold this loosely. I just don't know. Like, it's okay to do that. In fact, that would be great if you could do that. that's a way that we learn in a healthy manner, as opposed to saying like, hey, I've got this much information and I am rock solid adamant about it, right? And we think that we got it all figured out and we know exactly what's going on. We're missing it. We're missing it. All of these are kind of related. They build off of each other, right? But the fourth one is militant learning. Militant learning. And what I mean by that is learning only to debate, right? So you learn some things so that you can then go and take down your enemies on the internet, right? Like this false confidence, this lack of empathy, it weaponizes knowledge against others. Some of you like to debate. Some of you hate to debate. But for some of you that might be more okay with confrontation, whatever, like you like this kind of this back and forth, this exchange, and that's fine, that's good. But we got to be really careful. We got to be really wise. How do we posture ourselves with other people? Christians, I think we have to confess, can sometimes be especially bad at this one. And to be honest, it's not just Christians. It's anybody who holds religiously to an idea, right? Like you could be an atheist and believe with like a ton of religious fervor and conviction in something and be really argumentative about it. When I was about 14 years old, I had a YouTube account. And I would go and watch, Christian videos, apologists and debates and things like this. And there'd be obviously a stream of comments, and I would just dive into those comments, tear people up, right? You're wrong about this. And I was like, text yelling at people. And like, I thought I was like doing something good for Jesus. And I was like witnessing for my faith. And I was like standing strong on my convictions. It's cringeworthy. I don't know if anyone could ever dig up those comments, but like it is cringeworthy the way that I postured and presented myself online or with other people. Like I was so combative, so argumentative. I really thought that I had it all figured out, that I knew all the answers. I was so well informed. I definitely didn't know what I was talking about. But my posture and my presence with other people was one of like, hey, let's fight about this because I know that I'm right. That's a terrible witness for Jesus. So some of you guys, you're very zealous for the faith, and that's great, but I want you to remember that we have been given a ministry. Paul says this, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, we've been given a ministry of reconciliation, not the ministry of rightness, right? You don't have to win all the fights. You don't have to prove to people that you're right. You got nothing to prove. It's not a contest, right? Been given the ministry of reconciliation. Don't hurt your opportunity for reconciliation by trying to prove to somebody that you're right. Knowledge is not for the purpose of intellectual combat, all right? There's been a ton of research, a lot of studies on this have shown that when we get into debates with people, we actually become less rational. People think when I start to debate, I'm going to become like so logical and rational and I'll pick apart. No, you actually become less rational in a debate. You become more emotional, more defensive, and we do not learn well in an argumentative posture. Like the learning part of our brain shuts off and the I'm going to win part of our brain kicks in. That's not helpful for learning, right? Fifth one is elitist learning. Elitist learning. That is learning for the purpose of status and belonging to a social class. Learning for the purpose of status, belonging to a social class. So for instance, if I was to go and travel down into like the deep south and I was gonna be around, southern gentlemen or whatever, like I might have to take an etiquette class because like I don't know the customs and those sorts of things, right? So I might learn so that I could belong to this group of people, right? And my theory, and I think I have some good backing for this, is that many, if not most of us, this is like the whole reason we go to college nowadays, right? We have this view of education and learning that's all about the bottom line of like, how am I gonna use this to get a good job or make money or network or whatever? And so we're missing like the whole point of education. We think it's just a way for us to like get a good house in the burbs and climb the social ladder. But that's not the end goal of education. The end goal of education is that you'll become a virtuous person. So keep in mind, am I being educated so that I can belong to some sort of like upper tier of society or something? Or am I being educated and I'm pursuing learning because I want to become a humble, teachable person who's going to live out of virtue? Last one here, entrenched learning. That's a learning which avoids opposing views and contrary evidence, only reinforcing already held ideas and assumptions, clinging to certainty. So when I was a little kid, I had a stuffed animal. He was about this big. His name was Tiger. He was a tiger. I was not a very creative child. And I used to, you know, snuggle up at night with my tiger. And that was fine when I was six. But if I told you that I still do that today, you'd look at me and you'd go, okay. It might be time to grow out of that, right, and let it go, right? There are some things that you just, as you mature, as you get older, you need to let go of, right? And what I want to tell us is that certainty is like the comfort object of religious people. It's fine, it's good when we're younger and we're growing in faith, when we're learning new things. But as we mature, we're going to need to hold some things more loosely and let go of some of the certainties that we've had since we were a kid, right? Learn that things are a little more complicated, maybe not quite as black and white as we thought. Now, please hear me in this. I'm not saying that we can't believe things with firm conviction and stand our ground for what's true, right? That we can't have a serious weight to what we believe, right? And believe with a lot of certainty, right? Like, I really believe this, right? Like, I really, really believe that Jesus is raised from the dead and that changes everything. I really believe that. But what I mean by letting go or not holding certainty so tightly is you just can't learn if you're not going to be willing to admit some of the complexity or welcome some of the other views or hold some things loosely and say, I could be wrong about this or I could be wrong about that or I could see how it's that way and not the way I thought. And there's just so many things in the Christian life that the older you get and the more you learn, you're just going to realize, wow, this is not as clear-cut as I used to think that it was. That doesn't mean you can't believe strongly, but it does mean you're just going to have to hold some things in tension, hold some things in a different way. Stop clinging to certainty. A few weeks ago, I was talking with one of the pastors on staff here, and he was telling me about a conversation he had with somebody in our church who had said, you know, I refuse to read this book by this person because they have a different, it's a politics book, and they have a different political, you know, opinion than I do, so I'm not going to read that. In fact, they said this, the Lord told me not to read that person. And I just want to caution us again. These are all words of caution. Be very, very careful. God has not called you to isolate and shelter yourself from people who think differently than you. He has not called you to live in a bubble and in a box. He has called you, yes, to deepen your own faith and to stand firmly therein, absolutely, but that doesn't mean that you can't engage with other people and other viewpoints. And if you do that, you're gonna miss some things that God has for you. We need diverse voices in our lives, pushing and challenging what we think that we know. We've got to have that. I would go so far as to say that most mature learning is unlearning. We might have to tear some things down, deconstruct a little bit, face some disorientation. There is no real spiritual maturity without suffering, without loss, without doubt, without disorientation. The church for hundreds of years has talked about this as the dark night of the soul. That there's just this period, there's this stage in our spiritual maturity that we have to go through where we face disorientation. We're like, I just don't know what's going on. I'm suffering through this. I'm caught in a crisis. I don't know if I believe. How can I believe? We've got to wrestle with some of those things. We can't just insulate ourselves like kids all the time anymore. As you grow up, you gotta experience and believe some new things. So my prayer for you, as we close this series tonight, I know tonight's kind of long, as heavy as we're wrapping things up, but my prayer for you as we close this series tonight, and for the rest of your lives, in fact, is that you will commit to being lifelong learners, right? This is what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. That word disciple means learner, student, apprentice. Somebody who's going to walk in the way of Jesus and learn from him how to be with him and like him, right? So you've got to take seriously our role as disciples of Jesus, have a hunger and a desire to learn. And if you're not there yet, if you're somebody who's like, you know, I just haven't really given myself to this yet, like I'm not maybe taking seriously God's call in my life to deepen my faith and to go to a new level, to take this to a different place, you're still splashing around in the shallow end, I want you to know that God loves you exactly where you're at, but that he's calling you into deeper waters. And he has something for you, that if you'll go there, you'll meet him in a new and a fresh way, in a move of power. So I want to close tonight with just these words of Paul. This will be kind of my prayer over you tonight as you go into our last small group of the semester. Paul says this in Romans 12. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Amen and amen. Y'all are dismissed to your last groups. We'll see you.